Hello and welcome to this edition of the ACCA SBR podcast. And today it's all about the UK and Irish variant. It's all about FRS 102. So you will be wanting to choose to do the UK or Irish variant if you ultimately want to have a practicing certificate, if you want to be an engagement partner for an audit and have your own practice. Now, today I'm fortunate to be joined by an old friend and colleague, Steve, and he is Mr. UK Gap. So without much further ado, let me just ask Steve to introduce himself.
Thanks, Tom. I've never been called Mr. UK Gap before, but it's quite like it, actually. I'm Steve Collins. I'm one of the directors at a firm of accountants based in Manchester called Leave It Wormsley Associates. I trained and qualified here. I've been here for the last 23 years. I specialise in UK and Irish GAAP, as well as IFRS and auditing and all the other techie subjects that I've took myself down over the years. I'm also the author of several books on the subject, so you could say that I've got a tortured brain where UK GAAP is concerned.
You could say that you are the expert on UK GAAP. If you're not going to say it, I'm going to say it. I'm very grateful. I'm being very modest.
But I do sort of know it inside out, let's put it that way. So, yeah.
So big picture, you've got UK GAAP, which I'm using for sort of FRS 102, and you've got international.
You have.
How did that arise? What's the big picture there, Steve?
Yeah, there's quite an interesting backstory to that, because for a few years I sat on the UK GAAP Technical Advisory Group at the Financial Reporting Council that maintains UK and Ireland accounting standards. And the UK standard setters used to be called the Accounting Standards Board many, many years ago, and they decided several years back that the UK should be reporting under an international-based regime, so an IFRS-based regime, if you like. And it was sort of too difficult to just put all private entities onto IFRS, because IFRS is for the big companies or your public interest entities and those sorts of things. So they had to have something that was proportionate for private entities. And they came up with FRS 102, which is based on IFRS for SMEs. So that's your slimmed down version of IFRS, if you like, for the small, medium sized entities. But the principles are broadly similar to IFRS, although I do add that they're not exactly aligned to IFRS.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a moment. But what you've got is, you know, FRS 102 is a one-stop shop. Yeah, as a single document, which is useful for smaller entities who aren't involved in some of the bigger issues.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's drill it down. Yeah. Let's talk about deferred tax.
All right. Everybody's favorite subject.
Well, you know, if it comes up in the exam, they will
an important concept.
They will need to be able to compare and contrast. They'll need to be able to understand the differences. Now, internationally, under ISA 12, the language is about temporary differences. The language is about tax bases. The language is about creating a deferred tax liability in full when the, you know, the carrying value of the asset exceeds the corresponding tax base. So if you have a revaluation gain, we need to record a deferred tax liability to get it an expense to match with that gain. So it's a balance sheet approach, really, isn't it? ISA 12.
Yes.
How, you know, we're not going to do numbers here. This is a discussion, an audio discussion. Yeah. How is that different under FRS 102?
Well, it's quite interesting, this, because I don't envy the staff at the FRC who had the job of taking essentially Section 29 of IFRS for SMEs and converting it to what we've got in FRS 102. Because in the UK and Ireland, Section 29 of FRS 102 uses the timing difference approach rather than the temporary difference approach found in IAS 12. So What you will do if you've done the exercise like I have and compare the outcome of a deferred tax calculation under FRS 102 versus IAS 12, you will see that there is not much in the final figure. You know, the calculation is different because the timing difference approach uses the differences inherent, if you like, between taxable profit and accounting profit.
So depreciation and capital allowances,
yep.
Your language,
yep.
Whereas the international language is the carrying value of the asset and the tax base.
Yeah, so we use like tax written down value for tax base, and I think tax allowable depreciation features somewhere down the line in IFRS, whereas we use capital allowances for those sorts of things. But essentially, you just gave an analogy of where the tax base of an asset is different from its statement of financial position or balance sheet value, its carrying value in the balance sheet. And that would be the same under UK GAAP, under FRS 102. We would still recognise a deferred tax asset or deferred tax liability in much the same way. But under FRS 102, it looks purely at the differences between sort of accounting profit and taxable profit. So the focus of the timing difference approach is on the P&L account, whereas the focus of the temporary difference approach under IAS 12 is, of course, on your balance sheet.
So I get that. I get there's an academic difference. There's a conceptual difference. I guess it's like if you go left, left and right, right, you end up at the same point. Is there a simple example that springs to mind where you would get a numerical difference? Because neither of them allow discounting. You know, is there an obvious example where you could have a calculation where it is different and it's not like really, really obscure?
I don't think there is, because the whole point of the redrafting exercise of section 29 of FRS 102. If I go back a step, actually, when the exposure drafts first came out of FRS 102, I mean, we're going back to 2013, I think, nearly 10 years ago, the FRC did go down the route of the temporary difference approach for deferred tax in UK GAAP. And there was quite a bit of outcry by the profession on it, who said it would be too difficult and it's not proportionate for private entities in the UK. So at the time, the staff developing FRS 102 were told to, or well, they were asked to use the timing difference approach, but the calculation of deferred tax under FRS 102 should not be different or markedly different under FRS 102 than it would be under IAS 12.
I'm almost losing the will to live, you know.
This is
an exam question, isn't it? And the answer is academically they're different, conceptually they're different. In reality,
they're not.
You
end up in the same position.
Okay, so we've covered deferred tax.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at another topic where I think there are differences, more recognition and measurement differences, and that's leasing.
Oh,
that's leasing. Now let me give a 1 minute, 30 second recap on international. So we've got a relatively new standard in IFRS 16, and that's based on the conceptual framework, the identification of a right to use asset. So if you're leasing an asset, the approach that it takes is, although you haven't got legal title, let's reflect the fact that you control and you've got access to economic benefits. So we capitalize leases, we recognize on the balance sheet the obligation to make those lease payments. Everything's kind of discounted. So when you enter into a lease, debit asset, credit liability, assets depreciated, liability, amortized costs, finance costs, whatever. So that's the approach taken internationally, right to use assets as the default, recognition of liabilities on the balance sheet. Over to you, Steve, to explain what FRS 102 does with leases.
Well, this is a bit sort of a bit of a strange time to ask me this question, because currently in the way that leasing works for a lessee under FRS 102 is based on the old IAS 17 standard, which, of course, students don't need to know about for ACCA SBR. So FRS 102 works on a pretty much a risks and rewards basis. So if the risks and rewards remain with the lessor, you've got an operating lease. If the risks and rewards pass from lessor to lessee, you've got a finance lease.
So and is that a clear cut distinction? I mean, how do you distinguish between whether or not substantially the risk and rewards have passed? How do you do that?
Well, I mean, under FRS 102, FRS 102 does provide a list of something like 8 indicators that point to finance lease classification. So, for example, if the asset is going to be used for the vast majority of its useful economic life, if the asset is perhaps specialised, so specific to the lessee, so nobody else could use it without massive modifications being made. So there are sort of ways of trying to identify between a finance and operating lease, and the standard is quite helpful in that respect. So we are quite a bit behind the international guys at the moment in terms of IFRS 16, but the FRC are looking currently, and I would imagine this might be some sort of current issue, if you like, for UK SBR sitters, because the FRC have said they've heard support for on-balance sheet lease accounting for lessees. So it is looking like the FRC are going to go down the route of aligning FRS 102 with IFRS 16. Now, I mean, they are going to have to do some significant simplifications to that standard of the principles in IFRS 16, simplify it to be proportionate to UK GAAP reporters. How they're going to do that, we're not entirely sure at the moment, because we're waiting on the exposure draft, which will be issued after the IASB issue their exposure draft on IFRS for SMEs review, which is actually due on the 8th of September.
2022. So watch this space, in other words. But the current situation is there's quite a radical difference in the balance sheet approach, or the there way is. That leases are reported on the balance sheet. Ultimately, in the P&L, though, it's pretty similar, isn't it? Because internationally, I'm charging depreciation, charging a finance cost.
Yeah.
And UK, you're charging...
Well, operating lease rentals for an operating lease, and but in a finance lease, we're still charging depreciation and we're still charging a finance cost. So you're not going to see a huge, I mean, there was all sorts of, when IFRS 16 was about to hit the streets, there was all sorts of forecasted numbers being bandied around in various entities and various CPD providers explaining what the impact would be. And they all took a similar view that your actual P&L movement isn't going to be earth-shatteringly different, whereas it's what's going on in your balance sheet or your statement of financial position that you need to be a little bit sort of aware of.
Yeah, in terms of gear. Well, when it was introduced, I guess the gearing ratio is there. But fundamentally, the cash flows are the same, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
You're leasing the same asset. We're just dressing it up in a different way.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right, one more.
Yeah.
IFRS 3, group accounts, goodwill.
Yeah.
Internationally, we got a choice as to how we measure NCI. So we have full goodwill and we have NCI measured as a proportion of net assets. And we have this lovely impairment test goodwill, where we do a cash generating unit. We do an annual impairment review on goodwill. And internationally, that is what we do. FRS 102?
Well, FRS 102. This is where sort of there's quite a lot of clear water between the two standards, because under FRS 102, you can't bring in the NCI share of goodwill, because the reality of it is, in a private entity, the value of the NCI, I mean, for IFRS 3, you've got to have a fair value of the NCI to bring their share of goodwill in on the balance sheet, debit goodwill, credit NCI. FRS 102 is geared for your private entities, so it's very hard to get a fair value of the NCI. So under FRS 102, you've only got the proportionate method for goodwill recognition.
So there's a practical justification, because you haven't got a share price to the NCI, because the shares are not traded. Therefore, the way to measure the NCI is a simple proportion of the net assets.
Exactly.
Which means that the goodwill becomes a little bit smaller.
A little bit smaller, yeah.
Only attributable to the parent. That's under FRS 102. I have to keep on reminding myself the differences
are. Very confusing. No, with amortization, this is where the fun starts, because for years, and I monitor this quite a lot because I've become a little bit obsessed with it, to be honest, at the IASB. For years, the IASB debate over whether goodwill should be amortized or not is one of those topics that never seems to get off the work plan, get off the agenda. And it's something that I can't see them ever agreeing on. Now, under FRS 102, you don't have a choice. You must amortize goodwill over its useful economic life. FRS 102 doesn't give you the option of having goodwill with an indefinite useful life. You must amortize it. And this didn't sit well with
some. Is there a maximum period for that? You said useful life. Is there a maximum period?
There's not a maximum period, but what the standard does say is that if management cannot come up with a reliable useful economic life, the maximum period in that situation is 10 years.
And in your practice, do your clients, are you able to come up with 15 years, 20 years, or do you just say, sod it, 10 years, come on, that's it?
In some cases, it is 10 years. In some cases, it's 5 years. In some cases, it is 20 years, and that's based on things like cash flow forecasts and budgets and all sorts of other things that go on. Now, provided that the management's reasons for choosing a life exceeding 10 years is supported by, you know, justifications, it should be fine to do that. There is no maximum under FRS 102. Like I say, there is when management cannot come up with a useful economic life. But the standard is quite specific on this 10-year rule, and it says in exceptional circumstances, it will be 10 years, because FRS 102 takes the view that if a company is buying another company and is paying more than fair value for the net assets and liabilities, then surely it's got an idea as to how long this goodwill is going to be left to run. Now, a lot of companies have an accounting policy that says we're going to write it off over 5 years because of integration matters. Standard setters around the world take a different view on goodwill. Some disagree with the concept completely because they say, well, what is goodwill? And what is goodwill, Tom, at the end of the day? It's a balancing figure, isn't it?
You certainly can't sell it, can you?
You can't sell it. And the standard is specific on that.
I'm not entirely sure you can control it either, because it's like a reputation, isn't it? You know, it can just be damaged and taken out without
you even, you know, you wake up one morning and it could be gone completely. And standard setters around the world will never, I don't think, will certainly in my career lifetime, I don't think they will ever come up with a consensus that says this is the reason why goodwill should be amortized. The FRC took the view that you should always amortize goodwill. So that's why we've got a big difference between the amortization rules in FRS 102 and what you do for goodwill under IFRS. Personally, I think the UK has got it right.
Oh, there you stuck your neck out. Well, I like the amortization model.
It's easy.
For its simplicity. I also think that if you do an annual impairment review, what you're really doing is putting in newly inherent goodwill through the back door.
Yes.
Because although the goodwill level is maintained, the reality is there are new customers, new cash flow budgets, new reputations being built. Yeah. So, yeah, whatever. Yeah, good.
In respect to goodwill, I think the only thing that it is quite consistent with is the impairment requirement, because certainly under FRS 102, you can't reverse goodwill impairment once you've put it in. I think IS 36 takes the same stance, doesn't
right. it?
It does. So there is consistency in that respect.
Yeah, once you've lost your reputation, you can't gain the old one back. You can build a new one. You can't gain the old one back.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like
that. Yeah, I like that as well. So there is some elements of consistency. If you dig, you know, scratch away at the surface, you will find it.
I have a feeling that we could talk forever, Steve. Let me just ask you one final question. Are you a rugby union man or a rugby league man? Are you
definitely
a press man or a UK Gap man? What's your...
Definitely rugby league because I'm a Warrington Wolves supporter. Okay. And IFRS or UK Gap, well, it's going to have to be UK Gap, isn't it? You know, I've got to pin my loyalty to UK Gap. But I do like IFRS. I like the challenge that IFRS brings. I like seeing... this sounds pretty bad, this, doesn't it? I like seeing how the differences start with IFRS and then flow through to FRS 102. I do find that quite interesting, and certainly watching certain things in standards develop over time. But again, that's just a symptom of my tortured mind.
Well, we're going to have to, like good friends can, we're going to have to agree to disagree, because I'm a I'm a rugby union man and a Saracens fan.
Oh, right.
And
I won't hold that against you.
Although, of course, Owen Farrell, you know, has his roots in rugby league.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just like IFRS, but there you go. Yeah. So anyway, thank you very much for joining us, Steve. That's really kind to share your knowledge and time and experience and practical and academic experience. So thank you very much. If you're listening to this and you're interested in passing SBR, whether the UK variant or the international variant, but if you've listened this far, you must be wanting to do the UK variant, the Irish variant, then please just reach out for me. But thank you very much for listening.